Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I was talking with a professor the other day, and he asked me, can you think of any area of work where there is unqualified demand for people right now, for good, talented, intelligent workers in the midst of a high unemployment rate that threatens to go into double digits? And the only one that we could come up with was the broad category of healthcare workers. My sister-in-law is a nurse, and it seems as though there is a never-ending need for healthcare workers, nurses, EMTs, physicians, all kinds of personnel. The Adams Chair of Excellence in Healthcare Services here at MTSU recently released the fourth edition of Allied Health in Tennessee, a supply and demand study that looks at the various healthcare professions in Tennessee and the areas in that are really searching for personnel. And with us today to talk about it are Dr. Martha Jo Edwards, who holds the Adams Chair of Excellence in Healthcare Services, and Cindy Chafin, who is Project Director for the Adams Chair of Excellence. Thank you both for being here with us today. It's in book form, and Dr. Edwards, let's start with you. I understand that it's not conducted every year, but why is this study conducted on a periodic basis?
Initially, when I first came to Tennessee, there was really no good data for the Tennessee Board of Regents or other academic institutions to look at regarding allied health professions that said where the needs might be. So the then chancellor of the Tennessee Board of Regents asked if we would conduct such a study. We amalgamated a group of deans and directors and other resource people from across the state and began to look at allied health. Now, allied health is very broad. There are some 200 professions that classify themselves as allied health. Knowing that we could not do a good job on looking at all 200, we selected those that are typically at the community college and university level. And those 26 and sometimes 27, 28, depending on the addition, we've added a few, became the basis for information not only for the hospitals, for teachers who are trying to encourage students to what careers to go into, so the high school counselors, the health science teachers that are in our high schools, but also the universities and community colleges who are looking to plan for additional programming and needing to address those that are really the greatest in demand, and it gives information to the Tennessee Board of Regents and THEC, Tennessee Higher Education Commission. Gives them a baseline of data from which to make those decisions.
How do you define the term allied health? What does that mean?
Well, allied health is, like I said, is a very broad category, and most generally it is done by exclusion. It's not dentistry, it's not medicine, it's not veterinary medicine, it is not nursing. It is it's those professions that are supportive of what is at the national level called MODFOPs, the medicine, dentistry, pharmacy, and so on. So these are the supportive professions that work within the hospital and within clinics and within the communities that are rarely seen because they're a few here, a few there. They're dispersed throughout the healthcare system, but they are as collectively, they make up 37% of the healthcare workforce, which is more than nurses. But because they are divided out by a particular profession or skill set, it makes them less visible. So when you have a shortage, for instance, of physical therapists, you know, it wouldn't get the front page news as much as you've got a shortage of doctors or a shortage of nurses.
So they're not visible, not because they don't have direct contact with patients.
Correct.
So some of them do. But would another example be, for instance, a lab technician?
Laboratory technician. And most people think of them and they think, well, there's somebody that draws my blood. And there's several levels. You have clinical laboratory scientists or medical technologists, which are prepared at the baccalaureate level. And then you have those at the master's level, which would be your cytotechnologist or your blood bank people that work within for doing type and cross match of blood. They're very important, I can assure you, when you have a shortage, as we do in Tennessee, of medical laboratory technologists in certain regions. Let's say you're looking at a region that only has a demand for, in the hospitals, 28 to 30, and yet they only have 14 physicians. That's a 50% vacancy rate. It can slow down your ability to get a diagnostic study in that area. And recruiting those people and getting them in, it's very, very difficult. So they are the silent ones. Mm-hmm. They don't make the news media, but the impact that they have on healthcare and your quality healthcare is dramatic.
In fact, with regard to lab technicians, isn't a particular problem with having so few of them that there's a smaller number who have to handle a great many more cases or a great many more slides, thereby increasing the stress to produce and enhancing the possibility of errors.
That's exactly right.
Misdiagnoses. Is this person HIV positive or not? Does this person have breast cancer or not?
Absolutely. And that's what we're seeing. As the vacancy rate is increased, the more they have to do with less, the greater the percent of errors. And it's a real problem in many areas.
Would a paramedic or an EMT fall under this category of allied health?
They fall into the category of allied health. We have an interesting situation in Tennessee in that we have a lot of volunteers. Paramedics and EMT specialists are very important in Tennessee because of the population centers and the necessity to get someone who is in crisis to a highly qualified tertiary care center within an hour. So EMTs and paramedics within our state in many areas have much greater responsibilities than some that might be working within a metropolitan area.
Cindy, from a nuts and bolts standpoint, how do you go about amassing all of the data for a project like this?
Well, it's not an easy task, Jenna. It's very cumbersome. The project itself has quite a lengthy timeline from start to finish. I think we worked on this edition for about 2 years before it was actually published. And I know with each edition it's been a little bit different, but this particular edition, we of course like to think it's even better than the ones that came before, but we do look at national data. We look at regional data, not regional in the sense that it's the Southeast United States, but it's regional for our state, metropolitan statistical areas. And then we also have looked at county data for this particular edition. So we've just broken it off into chunks and looked at it that way. Not only are we looking at the data from that side of it, we're also looking at the institutions and what do they have to offer from the other side of the equation. So we've had to solicit that information from all of the institutions across the state that have allied health programs. So we broke it into chunks and set a timeline and said, okay, over this many months we're going to look at this, then we're going to look at this. And it's not always a smooth, continuous process. You may stop and pick up and stop and pick up, but it's quite the task to put together something of this size.
Do you find certain areas of the state in greater need of allied healthcare professionals than others?
I think the data does clearly show that for certain professions, as Dr. Edwards said, we weren't able to look at all of them because there are over 200 categories of allied health. But depending on which one you're looking for, if you had an interest in a specific field, whether it was from a potential career standpoint or if you were an administrator trying to make programmatic decisions, you could use this as a tool and look up and say, okay, physical therapy, what is the outlook for that in Tennessee? What is the outlook for this particular region of the state? And also, well, what is the outlook for this particular county?
Do you think, Dr. Edwards, that given the rather sad state of the economy right now, that people are going to be more willing to go where the jobs are or be more willing to pick up and move? If there's a greater demand for physical therapists in this county than in their home county, that they'll go where the job is, even if it means having to leave behind friends and family?
Well, we are finding that they are more willing to relocate if there's job openings. Additionally, you find that there's been a lot of outsourcing, closing of factories. People who had never considered healthcare as a career are often looking at these different allied health professions saying, where can I get that educational preparation because I want to stay in this area? So this is an opportunity for them to look at that data from that perspective. We have a national problem. The data for allied health, because as I've said, there's some 200 fields that consider themselves allied health, the national data is just not there. We looked at and used the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupational Outlook data, and it is often 2 years dated or 3 years dated. And as you know, by the time we started this, we've had some significant economic downturns. So some of the data that we even represented and represent in this book is slightly off skew because of the changes just in a two-year period. You add to that the healthcare reform and the anticipated changes that are coming with healthcare reform, and you find it very difficult to do this kind of work and to a pinpoint set of data that says we need, say, 10 of these within the next period of time.
You anticipated one of my questions. If you could imagine what impact you think the recently passed healthcare reform legislation will have on healthcare professions, good or bad. Will it increase demand, or will it just mean that the demand will shift into different categories?
I think both. It will increase demand because of the numbers. If the healthcare reform package moves forward as prescribed, the numbers of uninsured that will now have some level of insurance coverage will increase the demand. You also have the aging of the population, which increases the demand. And then you look at the kinds of things that the healthcare reform package is recommending, and that is increase emphasis on primary care. Some of these areas are more in tune with primary care, such as different diagnostic studies, laboratory studies, and so on, than some of the others that might be more acute care oriented, like surgical technology and things of that nature. We had a great shortage of surgical technology a few years ago, and we've seen the technology centers and the community colleges step up to the plate, and also these private schools that are opening, step up to the plate and encourage people to go into these fields so that between that and the economy, we're not seeing the shortage in surgical technologists as we saw several years ago. There are other changes that have occurred, such as physical therapy. Between the first time we did the study and now, they have moved from an entry-level requirement of a baccalaureate to a master's and now to a doctoral level. Mm-hmm. So when you move to a doctoral level as the entry level for that profession, the reliance on the associate degree or baccalaureate physical therapy assistant or occupational therapy assistant in those two particular categories becomes greater because you'll have fewer graduating at the doctoral level, the DPT level, than what you would have had a few years ago at the baccalaureate level. So you have shifting in the profession and shifting in the need in the healthcare system, causing a backlash, if you will, of relying more on the associate or the baccalaureate level to perform some of the skills that used to be done by the now doctorally prepared physical therapist.
You mentioned the aging of the population. Do home health care helpers fall into this category of allied health professions, people who visit the elderly in their homes?
Yes, they do. There's a not 100%, but I will tell you that respiratory care, those that who are dismissed from the hospital with respiratory problems and equipment that they must carry with them into their homes to maintain their health, those are serviced by respiratory therapist. Mm-hmm. And so they do go to the homes. Physical therapy assistants can do home health care and are often called upon to do so when, in fact, the patient is unable to by either socioeconomic or distance or just physical limitations, able to get to the centers. Sometimes physical therapy is brought to the home. There's another level of caregiver that doesn't It falls between nursing and allied health, the certified nurse assistant, which doesn't do necessarily medical care, but comes in and does some care in the home.
Some kinds of hygiene, cleaning up an incontinent
Absolutely.
Patient, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Moving, turning, making sure that their activities of daily living are taken care of. Occupational therapy will often do home. So yes, there's, as we've seen, an increase in the home health care. We've seen the increased need as well in the allied health fields.
Cindy, when it came to organizing the book, what kind of structure did you decide to take so that it would be the most user-friendly resource mm-hmm. possible?
Well, what we tried to do, we were funded this year by two groups, the Tennessee Workforce Investment Board and also the Tennessee Hospital Association. And of course, we wanted to get their input, not just on this particular edition, but what's worked well in the past, what did you like, what did you not like, what would you like to see done differently, that sort of thing. So we did solicit feedback from them as well as their advisory boards. They were able to offer input on what the new edition would look like. We also wanted to be more reflective of what's currently going on out there with the terminology and the way things are classified. The original editions, they used a different set of categories than what we used for this one. It was the National Healthcare Skills Laboratory Standards, I believe is what it's called, for the first couple of editions. And then for this one, we actually went with the health sciences categories that are being used both by the Tennessee Department of Labor and the Tennessee Department of Education. There are clusters that they've identified within health sciences, and we use that terminology to actually categorize the allied health fields that we were looking at. So we tried to take into account feedback from our funding agency, our users, as well as what's currently out there right now that maybe wasn't the case when we first released the first edition.
So you're using terminology that's already being used by Tennessee entities, which makes sense because you're examining only Tennessee.
Yes, and it makes it more useful to them because they're used to the terminology. They're not picking up something and trying to figure out, okay, well, what does this mean? We're speaking their language, and it makes it more relevant to them.
If I am a professional who's been in the business for several years, or a hospital administrator, somebody like that, regardless of whether I am that person or if I am a college student trying to decide what direction I want my academic career and my future professional life to go in, I'll find this resource equally accessible.
Yes. Yes. And in fact, over the years, I was not involved in the first several editions that were released, but I've become very familiar with them since taking on this latest edition. People have become used to the Adams Chair putting out this piece, and it's sort of the go-to document, the go-to resource for allied health and data surrounding allied health. And I think as people become more familiar with that, they see us more and more as a resource to help them with allied health issues. And I know this year, for the first time, we've been asked by a group of high school health sciences professionals to actually help them develop a lesson plan so they can their teachers can take it into the classroom and already have something prepared to go over with their students. So I think they're increasingly using us as a resource because they've seen this publication now for several years. They're familiar with it. It's relevant. It's useful. They're coming back for it every time it's released because it's been something that's useful.
Have you had students and alumni talk to you about prior editions and say things like, boy, this has really helped me put my priorities in order as I'm trying to make these decisions, these tough decisions about, you know, what area I really want to focus on?
I've had personal comments. People have shared those with me when I've went out and presented to a board or to a group about what all this entails. Usually somebody around the table will say, you know, I had this person come up to me and say just what you said. I really didn't know what I wanted to do or what this field was all about. If it was something that was a growing field, would I have a future if I chose A versus B? And we do get those personal stories. I know I've gotten them when I've went out.
Dr. Edwards, how do you advise a young person whose passion might be in one particular area of allied health, but there's not as great a demand for their passion and their interest as there is for other areas of allied health? Where do you balance the personal passion and the personal aptitude versus economic pragmatism?
Sure. Well, the economic pragmatism comes into play, especially today. Typically, you'll sit down and talk with a student regarding what their capability is as far as moving, paying for tuition, how long they want to be in school, what are their goals, not just, you know, their personal passion for going into one of the health professions, but why have they chosen that, and what are the parameters under which they can operate? Can they afford? Are they married with children and place-bound? Can they? How close do they live to a university or community college or technical center that might have one of the programs? And is there a career ladder? Oftentimes, we can engage them in, for instance, certified nursing assistant in their initial phase to get them introduced to healthcare and then move into one of the other allied healths, giving them an opportunity to work part-time in the health professions rather than maybe working for McDonald's or somewhere, so that they now are building a skill set that is applicable in one of the other health professions that they want to go into. I try not to steer students away from if they are really wanting to go into healthcare, but to start them at a place that it may be a beginning place that they can build on to them.
Are there allied healthcare professions that require only, say, a community college associate's degree, or as opposed to a four-year education?
Oh,
or do you recommend that someone go for a four-year school to get a more holistic education as opposed to sticking to the two-year course?
Well, again, it's an assessment of that person's context, their ability to go to a university and pay for it, and their grade point average, and several things. But there are many of the careers that are in this book that are at the two-year level: physical therapy assistant, occupational therapy assistant, medical laboratory technician, radiologic technology, several of them that have entry-level skills that they can then build on with additional 1, 2, or 3 years, or to finish a baccalaureate degree. So there's one of the things about healthcare, there's a place for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you step back and take a look at what all it takes to serve a client who's at that point of physical illness and having to diagnose it, treat it, and rehabilitate from it, there's a whole cadre of people that these people interact with, and all of those are well-trained, usually certified or licensed individuals that have that skill set. So I encourage especially people who may be place-bound to take a look at healthcare as being one of those things that I often say you can't move healthcare to across the border. You know, if you gain those skills and you are good at it and you enjoy it, you should be able to find adequate work within the community you want to live in. And I think these days that hits a target for many people in Tennessee.
Cindy, one of the things that came to my mind as I was talking to Dr. Murat Arik of the Business and Economic Research Center about his assessment of healthcare in Nashville and how Nashville stacks up with various peer cities when it comes to the business aspect of healthcare, is why we aren't known as more of a healthcare mecca than we are. I think of Birmingham and UAB. I think of Duke, even just in the South. You know, I'm not comparing us to Johns Hopkins or whatever. But why doesn't the name Tennessee come to mind more with the hospital at Memphis and UT and Vanderbilt and so on when it comes to healthcare?
We are beginning to be known as a healthcare capital. It's the capital expenditures on healthcare, 25% of them that were spent in the United States came out of Nashville, according to this study. The capital venture that we invest in healthcare, you've got HCA, which is the largest for-profit healthcare system in the United States. You've got a lot of venture capital coming out of Nashville. I think it's just a matter of time before that overrides Music City as the title, because you have Vanderbilt, Meharry, you have enormous educational opportunities and research. Vanderbilt is one of the top 10 funded by NIH hospitals in the United States. So it's coming. It's just probably a little slower.
And so your allied health study dovetails with Dr. Arik's study of Nashville and the economic aspect of it very nicely.
It certainly does. One of the things that she was talking about, the structure, we did not go so far from the past entities because we wanted their ability for the teachers, the counselors, the advisors to take a look at a 10-year spread of, you know, okay, how many did we have in 10 years ago? And compared to another profession, how many more have we seen? What's the demand? What's the output in Tennessee? So that this gives you not only the today, but a historical perspective. And we find that in Tennessee, approximately 1 in 8 positions in the workforce are in healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's an enormous piece of the economy. So it's not one that we easily turn away from or ignore, even though you might not recognize the title of cytotechnology, you know, even though you might not recognize a title of one of the professions. When you amalgamate the allied healths together, 37% of the health workforce are allied health. It's a big, big piece, thus the need for this. Now, the Tennessee Center for Nursing has done a wonderful job calculating nursing shortage, how many we need, how many we're putting out, and they have been funded up until recently very well to do that. We run behind that, trying to do our allied health study, and part of the reason is that it's so dispersed and diverse mm-hmm. that it's really hard for the people to get the image of the need, just like you were saying, of why isn't Nashville seen as the healthcare scene that it is? Mm-hmm. Allied health isn't seen as the shortages that it is because it's so diverse.
And this will help to raise the profile.
And it helps raise the profile, sure does.
And if you have over 200 positions, that's so many that the average person would have no idea, well, what does this position do? Or I've never even heard of this one because there are so many of them out there.
Did you use any MTSU students, Cindy, in helping you crunch the numbers here?
We have had students through the Adams Chair of Excellence that helped tremendously with this publication, and I know with the previous ones as well. I think it's been a good introduction for many of them and an education to them as to what is allied health. Many did not even know what it was until they got involved with this study, so it's been an educational tool for our own students as well.
And if you want a copy of Allied Health in Tennessee, a supply and demand study, what do you need to do?
They can contact us through our MTSU website. We have a downloadable copy on the website. We also have limited copies that, upon request, we could send out to an individual that's interested. But it is available online.
The website is so long that if I were to give it to you right now, you wouldn't have time to go and get a pen. Let me say that Dr. Martha Jo Edwards' email address is mjedward@mtsu.edu. Cindy Chafin's email address is cchafin@mtsu.edu. And also, if you go to www.mtsu.edu, click on the A to Z index and look for Adams Chair, then you can go right to that website.
That's right. And then there's a listing on the left-hand side of publications, and it's in print in a PDF file.
Okay. Thank you both for being here with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can download the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes. Mm-hmm.